in perhaps, you know, the world's greatest sporting precinct, right in the shadows of one of the world's greatest cities.
I used to love the roar of the crowd.
Magnificent mark taken by Roy Carter.
A fighting is in the time.
He gets inside, well inside.
In any way that you can see, just with your grin. Listening head and skin, you're not really behind the chair.
Oh, Cochin, just a little bit of genius.
Welcome back to Richmond Tiger Talk. My name's Nick.
And I'm Andy.
And how do we feel about round one?
Well, Nick, it's an interesting question. Now that Carlton have comprehensively hit the skids as a football club and sort of seem to have embraced a decade-long era of mediocrity and through their board dysfunction, and we've had the wood over them in recent games, Does round one still inspire the same fear, hate, and loathing that it used to?
That's a good question. Honestly, Carlton's ongoing failure and misery, I feel it's like somebody asking me, do you still enjoy good scotch? Of course I do. I love it.
And I'm enjoying good scotch right now.
Carlton's misery for me is something that I can enjoy on a continuous basis. There's no, you know, if they're really bad this year, I'm really looking forward to them being really bad next year as well. As for how I'd feel about the game, it means I've less specific fear and trepidation about this week than perhaps in previous years. But there is also still a fear of, oh my God, they're a wretched team. And when we do the preview, I've got a lot of evidence on just how wretched they are. But, you know, it's a two-horse race and funnier things have happened. So, yeah, there's still some fear there. But, you know, it's tinged by a profound appreciation of just what a mediocre situation they're in.
Yeah, it's funny how quickly things turn, but we shouldn't forget how comprehensively and above the form line that the two teams were at the time, how much they've beaten us in big games. Like, yes, there was the final, but let's not forget the centenary game as well.
Oh yeah.
You know, there's been some pretty awful Carlton games of recent years. So they're not the bogeyman they once were. And we can't win round one. Like, if we win, it's expected. It's just, you've just parred the hole. And if we lose, it's a disaster. But still important, beating Carlton is always good. Mm. And we should never forget that. We should never forget the history.
No, never take it for granted.
This modern Carlton team may be crap, but it's still the Carlton jersey and it's still Carlton supporters. And we should go into round one. It's not like it used to be for me, close to the biggest game of the year. Particularly before we start playing finals. And now it's slightly less. It's, you know, probably not even the top six regular season games. I think that's fair. But it's still important.
It's still a thing. It'll still be a big crowd. Still at the MCG. It's footy coming back after the long dry hump of the preseason. You know, it's nice to have it back. But, yeah, and we do have a lot of accumulated trauma about round one games versus Carlton, so I'm never going to take them for granted, but I would, you know, as you say, we can par the hole. You know, if we have a comprehensive win, it's good, but it's, you know, it's nothing outstanding. Probably won't tell us a great deal either way, but you know, and we're 32 point favourites, so we should win and hopefully win well, but yeah, I'm nervous.
Yeah, so that's probably a good way to transition before we start analysing the game into the preseason. And because for me, the preseason was thoroughly lackluster and not very exciting at all. So this is the round one's the first time we get to see some of the charges in when the ammunition's live. But before we transition, last week we discussed about what we learnt from the preseason. What did we learn from that final last? I won't say disastrous, but pretty awful game. What have we learned from the preseason now?
Well, I think we probably knew this already, but it's for me the the big message is that Damien Hardwick doesn't respect the sanctity of the Ansett Escort NAB Cup.
No, and I thought that was quite funny when he bought the players off. We would have done that, but we all wanted him to do it. But aside from the obvious, is there anything more we learnt at that from the players? Like, I mean, the last game, Connor Menadue is good with his disposal. Didn't get that much of it, but was quite classy when he did. Townsend, as hard as a cat's head, but gets himself injured. That's not new either. Conker was doing, we actually discussed Conker the week before, and I think I was fairly, before he did his hamstring from yet again, he was playing at about the level when we said last week that, you know, he's sort of an end of your best 22 type player. That I didn't think that was changing in the game. And obviously it's, you know, the injury puts pale over his career, but that's, again, that's nothing new. So really, and Chol, I think, comprehensively proved he was not ready for round one, but, you know, I certainly wasn't on the bandwagon that he was going to be either.
He still had some fun moments, though.
He did indeed, but, yeah, and some less fun ones. And the main thing was, it looks like by now, it looks like despite Eddie Maguire's excellent medical diagnosis on the ground. But the worst one was not the Edwards one. The worst one for me was him saying that Townsend was fine after he got concussed. How the hell do you know? Concussions are the hardest thing to diagnose, and they cannot be diagnosed from the coach, from the coach's box, let alone the commentary box.
Look, and I know that they've got to fill airtime during a lackluster preseason game, so you know, that's not an easy job. But the way he was talking about Dr. Peter Larkin's saying, if he has a broken collarbone, he's out for 6 to 8 weeks. Like he was saying as if he had a broken collarbone rather than if. Like he had no, despite the way he sounded, he actually had no privileged medical information and was completely wrong, as it turned out. But, you know, as not for the first time, Eddie being wrong doesn't trouble him very much. Look, I was encouraged by Menadue. I mean, as you mentioned, he played reasonably well again, but then he sort of he showed a continuity of form across 3 games. It wasn't just a flash in the pan. I was quite encouraged by that. I was, look, it's obvious to say, but I was encouraged by Daniel Rioli.
Interesting. I wasn't particularly. I found him slightly fumbly, but why? What makes you optimistic?
I think he's getting used to the pace of the game, like the nice moment when Vickery seagulled a goal from him. Like he got the ball and he just had that quick couple of steps to get away from his man. And, you know, just I think the game slowed down for him just a little bit in that moment. And he had a few little moments with handballs in tight as well. He's still a bit fumbly, and we'd be a lot more excited if he'd taken a few of his chances over the last couple of weeks. But, you know, I can see why they've stuck with him. He's got the tools to invest in. I'm not sure if he plays on Thursday, but it wouldn't surprise me at all if he was in the squad.
Okay, that was going to be my question, is would you play him on Thursday? I take it that's Nick talk for probably not?
I don't know. I'd have to... If Lids is out, yeah, I'd play him just for the sake of another forward. Although Sammy Lloyd does do very well in these types of games.
I would play Sammy Lloyd. But, yeah, anyway, I mean, we're micromanaging at this point. He was decent during preseason. And Sammy Lloyd did nothing spectacular. But, you know, in the preseason. But, yeah, I think overall the runs are on the board, and Rioli might find round one a bit tough, like running out a full game. So our top four players, and I know it's not a fantastic measure, but in preseason you have to judge a bit by minutes per game. And Our four top players were Miles, Hawley, Grigg, and Edwards. So I don't think there's many surprises there in Dream Team points per minute. Unfortunately, three of those four are carrying injuries into round one, but I think possibly all will play.
No issue with Miles. I do.
No, no, there is an issue with Miles. He's been not trading fully.
Oh, okay. Oh, I didn't know. Certainly hope he is fit. He's, as we saw, he is extremely important.
It was clear in the preseason. He honestly, in the one preseason game he played, he looked like our best midfielder. Full stop. Inside
midfielder. Yeah, I think Townsend is much more playable next to Miles and Cochin. You've got a balance of workload there that you don't with if you're using other guys.
So did anyone else stand up out for you?
Well, I looked closely at Matthew Loeb because word was we kicked the tyres on him, and as any will be in once again looking for another ruckman at the end of this year. I wasn't that impressed, actually. You know, he's a decent player, but kind of broke even with Hampson, who did his usual, you know, good attempts, not particularly good at clearances, gave us nothing up forward, frustration. So, yeah, I was interested by that.
Yeah, fair enough. Hampson apparently was looking fitter right at the end of the preseason, so that's good to know.
Yeah, that we are in no, it would take an unlikely series of events to have either Ben Griffiths or Ty Vickery start his game as number one ruckman, which is a good thing.
You know, there was, in the old days before the sub rule, the teams were regularly playing two rucks, so, you know, you never know. We might see more of Hammer Vickery this year.
As
demanded by the fans.
Yeah. I liked Lennon's night for, you know, he didn't win a ton of ball, but he felt an industrious effort at half forward.
Oh, okay. I was sort of somewhat underwhelmed by his preseason as a whole, but I think probably got a hold of playing.
Well, if you have to think that the Fremantle game was pretty much a write-off to be a forward at, and the Port game was only slightly better, and he played half the game against Hawthorn and kicked three goals as a, you know, seagull fashion. So we probably didn't learn a great deal, but I did in a night where, you know, because we were so down on rotations, you know, fatigue exacerbates skill mistakes. It was noticeable how much better he was kicking the ball, yeah, into forward 50 pretty much compared to anybody this side of Lids.
I like him against bad teams because, you know, how do you lose against bad teams? You blow your inside 50 entries. You're not clean in converting, and that's what he does. So if you're going to get opportunities and, you know, the problem with Lennon is he doesn't get that much of it, and maybe his player might be able to run off him a bit, and he might struggle a bit.
I think he does have the potential to end up winning a fair bit of ball, but yeah, it'll depend on the role. The Hawthorn game the Hawthorn game last year, again, he didn't win a lot of ball on that, but he was pretty tireless as a sort of third marking target at half forward, and was either winning or breaking even a lot. And he has a track record of the VFL of being a well above average ball winner. So there is, you know, he's proven he can do it, which you know, there's something to work with.
Yeah, I mean that's all fair. I was referring more to his sort of lack of tank and the fact that a really good team, which when you're not winning the run and play, would be able to exploit him. But I think we're getting off the point here. Is the point is, I like him playing against bad teams.
And that's
not a criticism. That's saying you know, in bad teams you have to convert your opportunities.
I think Jackson, great Nick, and I don't need to talk about that. I think Vlossy looks well on his way to build on really good season last year.
Well, to me, it looks exactly in the way to play exactly like he did last year.
Yeah, and he was winning a ton of contests. It was nice to see. I thought Nathan Broad actually had a few nice moments, but yeah, you don't want him kicking under pressure all that often.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to be long in the conversation for round one.
No, I don't think so. But as we had both Asprey and Rance pretty much the whole game, he didn't get isolated one out against a gorilla forward, and he's fine as long as you keep him in that circumstance.
So is there anyone else that stood out for you?
Well, speaking of which, what do you think of Dave Asprey's game?
It was fine. I didn't notice anything particularly bad. Did something stand out to you?
I was paying attention to him because the other big question for the season for me is who we, you know, the two players we have to replace over the next 12-18 months are Chaplin and Marriage, and Asprey's out of contract at the end of the year, so the time is now for his Richmond career. Yeah, I paid a lot of attention to him. He had a pretty good game. You don't want to get him isolated on a long lead against someone who's a bit quick, but he was perfectly fine, if not regularly beating his man in one-on-one contests.
Okay. I didn't see a compelling case he's better than Chaplin yet, but, I mean, as you say,
Chaplin was pretty decent. Yeah, for me, if he can be good, I'd be quite happy with that. Because we have an elite key defender. He just has to be good.
Yeah, he does. But anyway, we'll wait and see. I probably wouldn't pick him for round one, but I certainly wouldn't pick him, Grimes, and Batchelor all on the same team. That's a lot of players who don't give you much on the offensive end of the ball. But we'll wait and see.
Well, I think Grimes is in pretty tip-top, Nick. Do you want to... There was another game on Friday with the VFL. Do you want to talk about that quickly?
Yeah, well, one thing that always strikes me in those games, you read the reports and they're so subjective on without the stat sheet, without, you know, our commentary. It's funny how different people have completely different takes on the game. Like the multiple people said that Taylor Hunt didn't do anything, and the AFL site said he was one of the best. So, yeah, who's going to read too much into them?
I was encouraged by the form of a couple of the draftees. Callum Moore at centre half back played very well, apparently. I do think there is a certain amount of homeless person's Alex Rance about him. Like he's a genuinely dynamic athlete. He's got a track record of being quite a good ball winner as a junior, and he's got the shanking kick issues of young Alex Rance to a much greater degree, and to the extent where it's a genuine question, he can have an AFL career. But, you know, there's something to work with.
Yeah, that's a really nice turn of phrase, and I agree with everything. I think I think Alex Rance's early disposal issues were massively overdone, just because he looked a bit rushed. But I would agree with everything that you said, and it was still awkward. Moore is another level again for awkwardness, but. You know, God, Lord knows, you know, there is the odd isolated example of someone in his position getting his kicking from awful to mediocre and, you know, getting to 100 games. So it can happen.
Yeah, and he's a rookie pick. So, you know, the investment was low. Oleg Markov had a pretty nice game, and I was quite encouraged to see he won a few clearances, which I wouldn't have said was a potential strength. Of his. Adam Markov Markham is there as, Lambert 2.0 in the scrappy VFL player ready to step in if needed?
Yeah, I'm not buying the he's in round one selection. His numbers aren't good enough. But yeah, I agree with your analysis. But like, if you compare him to Lambert in the early preseason games last year, Lambert was killing it. And Marcon's just been okay, which is great.
He's more of an inside, midfielder, which is nice to have a bit more depth there. But yeah, he's sort of in the if I had to pick what order sort of players are likely to play over the course of the season, I'd sort of put him at about 30. So
yeah, I mean, he's going to play behind Moore, behind Townsend. He can't play forward, so you're talking inside mids. Like it's a long queue. George played pretty well as well.
Yeah, George Castagna. And Dan Butler had his moments of being frisky as well. Nice to see.
Yeah, and Nathan Drummond had a contract extension.
Yeah, I was, frankly, mildly surprised. It's a good vote of confidence in the kid. They must be obviously confident in how the recovery's going. But I actually like it to the extent that, he doesn't have to kill himself rushing back early from the ACL. He can, he knows that the club believes in him and he can take his time if needed.
Yeah, it was a slightly random one and the timing was weird, but whatever. I guess it's better to announce it than not. So all in all, maybe Oleg will get game round one, but I'm looking to see. I'd be quite happy if Oleg played round one as our 22nd player. It'd be interesting to see him out there.
Probably not for me, even with a few injuries. But yeah, just as a, what you're looking. Guys coming in, taking a big step up in level, from essentially the SNFL reserves to the VFL and not looking overmatched. That's a good thing.
Okay, Nick. I think that's enough on the preseason. So before we get on to the Carlton preview, unless there's anything else you wanted to mention?
No, I'm good. Well, there's a few little bits and pieces of news. Do you want to knock them off?
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess the biggest one in order is the Hardwick extension. So we debated this a few weeks ago, and I don't think we need to rehash it because it pretty much was pretty well known a couple of weeks ago what was going to happen. I'm underwhelmed. I'm still underwhelmed. We've won a bidding war against ourselves to re-sign Dimmer, but what can you do? They're insiders. They know what they're doing. So let's hope there's some rationality. All I will say is I don't give money to the club and I don't financially support it. And I didn't donate to the Fighting Tiger Fund to pay off coaches. So let's hope that Dimmer works out and sees out
his
contract.
I gotta say that I've thought about this a few different ways. And if you compare it to some of the American sports we follow, they do have a much faster rate of change of coaches, although, AFL has had a few in recent years. But it does seem to be the case that in a universe in which Justin Lepich received a one-year contract extension and you can't give Damien Hardwick the same contract extension as Justin Lepich. It's the sort of, in the AFL economy, the two-year extension makes sense. But it just seems to be the case. There is literally now no coaches other than Alistair Clarkson out of contract at the end of the year.
Yeah, and I think Brisbane are desperate, but Buckley got a contract extension.
Oh, yeah, Buckley got 2 years as well for a steady downward spiral. Now he's developed some players.
Yeah, so I mean, there's hope there, but there's but yeah, it's just that's why when I tweeted about this, that's why I wanted to, like, both to me, both Collingwood and Richmond's decisions were not rational, but, you know, I mean, Collingwood are a well-run club, and you'd hope that our club is fairly well-run, so two clubs have done it, so they must, that's why I phrased it, that you hope the insiders know what they're doing, because to me, that we've just won a bidding war against ourselves, so we can have, we can avoid for 1 week a nasty Robbo editorial saying that, oh, Dimmer's out of contract, you know, when every team has a downturn, and when we have a downturn this year, the knives will come out for Dimmer 1 week later than they would have because he's got a longer contract. But, you know, it just seems the AFL way, and it doesn't make sense to me, but, like, two relatively well-run clubs have done it, so there must be something to it.
Yeah, I don't know. The club is extremely financially sound these days. If they need to sack the coach, like, there's, they'll sack the coach. It is what it is.
But if things do go bad quickly, I think more than one person is nailed to the Dimmer mast. You know, if the ship goes down, Dimmer shouldn't go down alone. But that's focusing on the negative. We all want Dimmer to be wonderfully successful and have a statue erected him at Punt Road. So let's focus on the positive. Unfortunately, you go.
Well, and just, you know, the club has, it's had a sustained period of stability in terms of some key decision makers. And so, these things, all of these things get assessed on performance. So if the performance isn't there, those decision makers will be held accountable.
Yeah, absolutely. And there'll be success as a lot of fathers, but failure gets a lot of scapegoats as well. So unfortunately, Nick, let's do this quickly because it's again another very happy topic. And then we'll get to previewing Carlton. But so Yaron, there's now been, unfortunately, he's got a foot injury. There's now been stories that confirm that anyone who'd seen Yaron training, seeing that he turned up out of shape, seen the training videos. It was actually somewhat reassuring to have someone who had a worse skin fault test than I would have playing for Richmond. But yeah, so Yaron has both a dud foot and turned up overweight. So thus far, it's not looking good, but
it's frustrating. Apparently, he had really turned the corner and started to train and play quite well in match fitness. It's one of those, it's an annoying, nagging injury, but, you know, and one that is entirely treatable. So hopefully he can get a fitness base to get over it.
One wonders whether they're slightly related, but, anyway, we'll see. Bill Simmons camp that, professional athletes, they shouldn't get rewarded for being in shape, that you shouldn't expect them to be in that shape. But we digress. Anyway, sorry. Moving on.
Lids, the story today that Lids is under a fitness cloud, which, that for me is a very genuine concern. Possibly even in doubt for the Collingwood game, which, you know, frankly, is when the season really starts. Fingers crossed on that one. A good bit of news, I thought. Ben Rutten won a Young Coaches Award from the AFL Coaches Association. That's picked from the entire AFL. So I thought that was quite encouraging.
Yeah, that is a nice little bit of upside. And I guess another good story is that Shedder, Titch, or most improved player, perennial most improved player, looks like he'll be up for round one. So, I mean, that is really important, especially if Lids is out.
Yeah. No, definitely. Before we get to the Carlton game, the last bit of what did you think of the zany competing stadium ideas that are being tossed around?
Nick, I've got a cranky old man take.
Yep.
You could have at least pretended to sound surprised. our game is great because of the history, the tradition, and what it is today.
Mm.
It's not great because of halftime shows. It's not great because of God respect them and they do a great job, but because of social media people, because of website developers, because of the publicists. They do a great job. They're fantastic. They're great to the game. But the game is fundamentally, it's popular in Melbourne at its core because it's other sports have great media marketing people as well, but they're not as popular. The reason AFL is so popular is because it's culture and it's tradition. Punt Road has culture and tradition, and I think we should keep it as it is.
Hmm. Yeah, I think the Collingwood idea is silly, and a lot of the negativity about Eddie, and frankly, I think is, you know, there's agendas driving it. I mean, there is an issue about that they can't seemingly have a stadium that's got a. Where people can make money on a 20,000 crowd, but you know that's. Yeah, I haven't seen anything that seems like an obvious solution to that issue, and Punt Road isn't it for me. As you said, I'm certainly happy with it in its current role.
Yeah, and Richmond are using it. You know, it gets used. It's a training venue. It gets games are played on it. It's a community venue. You don't know what you've got till it's gone. Anyway, cracky old man moment over.
All right. So, Carlton. They're pretty bad.
They are bad. And people may have forgotten this, but Daisy Thomas was once good enough at football to get paid almost $1 million a year, and he's out.
I know.
And Cripps has barely done the pre-season. So only, sorry.
Yeah, Mark Murphy under a cloud. They have 17 players from other clubs on their list, which is five more than any other team, which is pretty impressive.
Yep, and they were a bad team last year, and then they lost Henderson, Yaron, who, okay, he's not playing at the moment, but used to play quite well for them and against us, and Menzel. You know, they've got a new coach. He's from the Clarkson School, which I don't think will scare Dimmer at all, because one thing Dimmer does do well is he coaches well against the Clarkson School and Clarkson himself. You've got Murphy and Cribbs, arguably, fair to say, two of their top three players under big injury clouds. Yeah, it's not looking good for them. And I checked the betting lines actually got bigger over the last few weeks. Hasn't come in despite our injuries.
No, which to me says maybe our injuries are being slightly overinflated by the need to fill columns during pre-season. But they are very poor at either end of the ground. Their best forward last year was Andreas Everett, which sort of tells you a lot. Levi Casbolt's okay, but when you look at the numbers, they're both they are poor at converting chances up forward, and they are poor at stopping other teams converting chances when they have the ball. And particularly they're weak at conceding marks inside 50, and that's something that we're generally very good at. The one area where there is a potential risk is that they've sort of retained the ability to be quite a decent team at centre bounces, and their clearance work is quite decent with Cripps. Sam Kerrich came over in the Menzel trade, has won a lot of ball in pre-season, and they're sort of Cripps and Kerrich are both your classic inside midfielders who'll have 8 kicks and 14 handballs, so they can win a lot of ball, but in terms of having the superstructure around them of sort of fleet of foot, high skill outside midfielders to complement the grunt, it's probably not there. So if we can break even in midfield, get the ball out in space, I'd just expect we'd have too much class not to win.
Yes, I mean there is the. Whenever Lids isn't playing, we're a significantly lesser team.
Mm.
And even half-fit lids makes us much better. So there's enough there to worry us, but yeah, it's I'm fairly confident.
Mm. Yeah, we should have too much quality. They should have a fair bit of trouble scoring. You would have thought they've, you know, it's been a slog for them in pre-season, where, you know, even when they've played reasonably well, they haven't scored at all fluently. So, you know, the game's there to be won. Just a matter, I think, is, you know, the scenario is as it is, as we've seen from our games versus Melbourne the last couple of years, if the game gets clogged up and we kick badly for goal.
Yeah, and they've got a new coach who might have a few tricks that surprise us. Never know. It was interesting. Champion Data described Carlton as being one of the furthest teams away from a premiership they've ever seen.
Hmm.
That's not good.
Hmm. I enjoyed their bit of data that from 1966 to 1995, they had the best record in the VFL/AFL, and since 1995, they've only been better than Melbourne.
Hmm. I'm Andy.
I'm Nick. We're Richmond Tiger Talk. One of the world's greatest cities.
I used to love the roar of the crowd.
Magnificent mark taken by Walcott.
A fighting experience.